Hi, everybody. This is Rita Prazeres Gonçalves, linguist and senior talent management consultant. In this podcast, I have conversations with language professionals who are willing to talk about their experience, their knowledge, and their strategies to navigate the ever-changing language industry. This is also a space where I can learn and share my insights. I have been working with LSPs, enterprise clients, and freelancers for over 20 years, and my main focus is talent management for the localization industry. Let's get to know some of the most interesting people in our field: translators, company owners, association representatives, and community builders. This is The Language Worker. This podcast is also available as a video cast on YouTube. Hi, everybody. Super special episode. Again, I guess I say this every time because it's true. And it's guests from Indonesia. So I'm very excited about that. We're going to find out a little bit how things are over there, how they're dealing with whatever is happening in the industry and all that. And the reason why we have these three people specifically is because I was working with Ira long, long ago when I was a project manager. She's still working for the company. So she was doing a great job. Apparently, she's still doing a great job. So I thought, because she's a famous person these days, she's a Lock Lunch ambassador and all those things. I thought, oh well, let's talk a little bit. Well, why don't you invite another two friends so that we have, multiple perspectives? And this is how we all came together, which has just happened exactly 2 minutes ago. So we're going to get to know each other better as we, have our conversation here. This is how it's going to go. So, but because of chronological reasons, I will start with Ira, and then we go to Harry, and then I'll have to learn how to pronounce your name. Sujuk? No.
Sugeng. Sugeng is okay, but
Sugeng.
I think it's
Oh,
difficult to
Sugeng.
pronounce the original
Yes.
pronunciation.
You will teach me in a minute, and I'll give it a shot, but I guess I need some time to adapt. So we're going to just get to know a little bit Ira and understand how she actually came to be this famous LinkedIn translator and big ambassador representative and all that. So Ira, you have been in the industry for a while, I'm sure, right? At least a good 15 years or so. But how did everything start? How did you actually decide that we're going to get into this? Was it already at university? Did you already study something that was related to languages? Did that start back then?
So I actually went to teachers college when I graduated from high school because I just want to be a teacher, an English teacher. That was it. But then, we have a little bit of, in Indonesia, the bureaucracy, how you make your thesis, and it's so difficult to find your, do you call it supervisor for the thesis? Yeah, pasugang. What do you call it? And then I thought, I was in Sydney with my uncles when I was in grade 5 and 6 and seven. Then I said, maybe if I transfer my university to Australia and then get more, better education there and with the experience of being independent. So I transferred to University of New South Wales. So there again, I continue my study in French language. And because the university offered me that I can take double degree, I took linguistics. So then I have a French and linguistic, and in the university, that's when I first get the subject of translation and interpreting. So that's only like one semester. But when I returned to Indonesia, I just became a teacher because that was my first goal, an English teacher. I think we went to the same institution, yeah, Hari. Like apparently we found out, oh, I was a teacher in that institution too. And then well, of course, and then I have children and I have to follow my husband to Bali to work. That's when I started being a translator. So I was working at the law firm in Bali as an interpreter, a translator, and an English teacher for the lawyers, for everyone in the company. So
Wow.
I love languages, but
Very
that's
busy.
how
Yes.
I get into interpreting and I get into translation in the law firm in Bali. That's how I started, of course. But then again, because my husband moved to different city for his job, and then have to resign. Then that's how I get into TransPerfect. I find a profession that I can, I can work anywhere. I can be a freelancer, and that's how I get into TransPerfect 2006 or seven.
Oh yes, so I hear you. I understand. That's pretty much when I also got really deep into the industry too. So it was basically parallel. So Sugeng, is it better? Yes. Sugeng. Okay, let's see. Okay. I'll practice. So what happened to you? Because I saw in your LinkedIn profile, everybody knows that I like reading the LinkedIn profiles just to make sure that I have an idea. And I saw that basically your career has been dedicated to being a lecturer, to being a professor, a teacher, and all of that. So when you were doing your first round of studies, was that what you were thinking about? Was that your original idea? How did you go to pursue this language-oriented career when you were, you know, deciding how to manage your studies?
Yep. Basically, I love languages. This is the first thing. So like Ira, I was also at that time majoring in English as a foreign language, especially in the teaching of EFL. I also took my master's degree. This is in the same field, but I start doing my thesis. At that time, I did my thesis on novel translation. Actually, I started translating since 1995. That's my first novel translation. So for about five years, I did translation with the publishers in Indonesia. So this is novels, popular books, and also sometimes religious books. So I thought, okay, I have enough in book translating. So I moved to, it was in Indonesia at the beginning of internet, 2000, in the year of 2000. And I started trying to look for a job through the internet with the translation. And also at the campus, I teach translation. So there is a match. So I can bring my experience when I do my job translating for the agencies into the class. So I feel it helps me to teach our students with a real example from the field. Mm-hmm. In 1997, I took applied linguistic short course in Singapore, and this is the first time I interpreted for a big event. That is Asia Pacific marketing product launch for Nokia at that time. Since then, I worked as a teacher, interpreters, and translators. And because of my post as a teacher, a university teacher, so I cannot move around freely like Ira. My job mostly in translations, so I can do it both. And since 2000, I have worked for many agencies. One of them might be, I forgot, TransPerfect too. Because
yes, who doesn't and who didn't work for TransPerfect, right? That's just normal.
Because at that time, I knew only around five people working in this field. 2000 and something up. Huh? There's not many people working on that field. I mean, translating for international agencies. So I translated many kinds of materials, starting from this is a kitchenware to localization and also transcreation.
Wow. So that's started long ago. So I'm sure you have lots of stories to tell us. So I'll just ask Harry, what the story was. So right now you're in this very professional office, right? So we're going to get to that.
It's a home. It's
where
a home.
You might. Oh, this is home. I thought you were in the office, like in another office.
Yeah,
right?
My
you're
office space company. At home.
Okay. It really looks like a, you know, one of those international company offices. We're going to get to the company.
Well, that's the image that I'm projecting. So that's good.
I see. It's working. It's working.
Okay. Okay. Like they say, you save the best for last. No, not really. Okay. Basically, I was trained. My education is basically in banking and economics, but I didn't pursue that career. So I went into teaching. After I almost graduated, I got some information that there is a training, a teacher's training. So I applied for it. I got a crash course 1 month, and then I became a teacher. So basically, I'm a teacher at the beginning of my career, but was not trained as a teacher, but was educated in economics as a banker. But I didn't pursue that. Anyway, after my, let's say, 3 years as a teacher, I needed a lot of money. So there was a company that was recruiting, but outside of where I am. I'm basically in Jakarta. So I have to fly out of Jakarta to work, but they promised a lot of money. So I was single. So I said, okay, no problem. So I got the job teaching again for a multinational company in mining. And then I was there on site. So basically I didn't get back to Jakarta until 3 months. So 3 months there, 3 months here. So I got there, I worked there for a year, almost a year. And then I returned to Jakarta with a lot of cash. You know, I was preparing for getting married, so I needed cash, so I got that, and I got married in the 90
98. We careful okay.
Okay, 98. I got married 97, yeah. So 98, I needed to go back to where I worked, but I couldn't take my wife. So I was a single again where I work. So I couldn't stand it, you know, long distance relationship. So I quit the job, came back to Jakarta, no job. Okay. So I thought, okay, what should I do? A friend of mine that gave me an idea. So he said that, okay, why don't you just study again, you know, for postgraduate? So I applied to University of Indonesia and got into linguistics. So I applied there, and most of my friends who were in postgraduate school were mostly lecturers. So when they asked me, so what did you study? I studied economics. Okay, so and I was teaching. And then one of my professors said, okay, what do you want to concentrate on? And I said, okay, I don't want to teach, to study more about teaching, because I've got enough, I thought at that time. And then I said, okay, why not linguistic and then translation? Luckily, I have my academic, what do you call it? Professor, he was a professor in translations. Luckily, he guided me. Okay, you should do this. You should do this. So I did. So I studied linguistic, specifically in translation. After I graduated, I have a wife. I have a kid. So I was studying. I was teaching English in the evening. So I had a hectic life during that time. And then suddenly, I finished my study, and then what now? I don't want to teach more, because I have to, you know, teach it during the evening, whereas I have a family. So I have to think of certain things, you know, with my family. And then a friend of mine said, okay, try this. And she gave me sort of a work from home. The work was doing like almost translation, but a little bit of that. And then
almost,
almost, yeah. The work was remote, so I had to work in the morning where the client was in Canada, And then we didn't have like cable like now. I was using modem, you know, using the telephone line. Yeah. And then dialing up, things like that. And so I finished my work. I returned attachment in an email. So, and then after that, a friend also gave me some kind of platform that happens to be pros.com. So I was, I went into that website, and then I opened an account, a free account. So basically, in 1 day, 8 hours, I was logged into pros.com, studying, reading, etc., and understanding what the platform was about. And then, okay, this is a good thing. So from then on, my career as a translator, you know, just took off, you know. But the problem was I have no clients yet. And then suddenly a client from Australia sent me a word, okay, would you like to? And I, yes, of course. And then after that, you know, just kind of took off the translation career. So I was an independent professional at that time. I call myself, because pros.com gave me lots of articles there, you know, reading how to learn to manage the business, you know, how to prepare yourself to be a translator, professional translator, and so on. So basically, starting professional translation career started from that platform. And then I, you know, kind of went on from there.
Mm-hmm. That's pretty classic. I guess that's the experience that a vast majority of people in our age have, at least, right? Because that's the way it used to be, right? There was like the most interesting thing to do is to be on the big portals, Translators Cafe and translators.com, depending on which part of the world you were from. So usually in the States, they're more Translators Cafe oriented, but in Europe and maybe in other countries, it's a bit more pros.com. And we're still there in pros.com, I believe. But since you guys are here, I'm going to take advantage of this situation and talk about a little bit about the language situation in your country. Because I remember when I sent you work, Ira, and I guess that's how you identify when you say that you work from English into your language, you identify it as Indonesian, right? But what does this mean? Does everybody speak Indonesian? Is it like an official language, but you have other languages? How, what's the situation like? Because you all have a dense background in knowledge, because you're all teachers, you all studied, you have your high studies and all of that. So how is the situation in Indonesia? Is it a one language like us in Portugal, because we're so small that it's, when we say Portuguese from Portugal, we mean this one thing? Or do you have a lot of different languages, but officially you do everything in Indonesian, especially in an international fashion?
So it's called the lingua franca, ya Pak Sugeng ya, Kang Hari. Mm-hmm. So Indonesian is the lingua franca, and like we have more than 300 ethnic languages. We have now 38.
That's what I
provinces.
Expected.
We have 38 provinces.
Well, the
in
official
Indonesia.
Language is Indonesian, of course. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the lingua franca is Indonesian.
The regional languages, we have, according to the statistic from the language center, 715.
715. Oh, yeah. Pasukan lab statistics.
The biggest one of the regional languages is Javanese. Mm-hmm. And then Sundanese. This is where Harry from Sundanese ethnicity. And after that, I don't know, number three, Malay or something. Maybe around 10 or 15 years ago, I did the research on this for a cell phone manufacturer before they localized their user
interface,
the UI into Japanese and Sundanese. Okay. I did the research for them. So this is the first cell phone localized into regional languages of Indonesia. Several times. So I don't want to mention the brand now, but this is the first.
It's fine. They don't mind, I'm sure.
The Japanese language, the biggest regional language, this is also my native language, is spoken in several countries too. Suriname, Madagascar, and some other countries. Therefore, this particular cell phone company localized it into that language too. And also the biggest social media company now also localized their UI and help page into Japanese also, in addition to into English. And everyday life in big city, usually we use Bahasa Indonesia or Indonesian language. But in a medium and small city, or even in a big city, when we are talking with people from the same ethnicity, then we speak the regional language.
So you're all multilingual, right? Or at least bilingual in the strict sense. So you have your own mother tongue, and then you have this more widespread Indonesian,
That's
at
right.
least, right? And I suppose depending on who you are, where you come from, then you have another confluence of other mixtures and things like that. So what's the situation for an average person in Indonesia? So you speak these two, at least, right? Your mother tongue and this lingua franca, as you call it, right?
Basically, I think... Okay, go ahead.
Yes, Harry.
Okay, basically, I think there was one of my professors said that where I live now in Jakarta, the capital city of Indonesia, is the, you know, the raw place where other Indonesian like to copy how they speak. But like Pak Sugeng said, there is also regional, a large like the Javanese. But that professor said to me that the people who speaks Indonesian with the Jakarta kind of
dialect,
you know,
let's call it.
Yeah, okay, dialect. You know, they like to copy it, you know, because of like, for example, film actors, you know, actresses or singers, you know, they mostly get their big breaks in Jakarta. So I guess the magnet for Indonesia is a vast country. So, but the thing is, Jakarta, the Indonesian language, the spoken, I think almost around the Indonesia, the rest of Indonesia, copies that pattern, I think. I don't know what Pak Sugeng or Irak have the take on this. Maybe you can add something.
Yeah, the Jakartan dialects of Bahasa Indonesia is very famous and imitated by youngsters, young people especially. And you know, Malaysia is our neighbor country, and their young people also try to speak Jakartan dialect of Bahasa Indonesia.
Wow. Is there a music industry, a movie industry that's very strong and that you export, or why do you think that is?
Because Indonesia is a vast country, and we have a lot of TV station, and then the movie industry is also good. So the people of Malaysia are exposed a lot to our movie, TV station, and so on. So the young people think that maybe they think that, oh, it's cool to speak Jakartan dialects.
Wow. And Jakartan dialect even, is like...
So when you apply to a translation company, Ira, let's suppose you've done it many times, but you're doing it the first few times that you do it. So you present yourself as an Indonesian translator, right?
Yes.
Or do you also add other possible languages that you might speak? Is there a market beyond, let's say, Indonesian and Javanese that we already mentioned? How is the market for your
like
local
that.
Languages? You don't.
No, we don't.
I actually put the
That's
Sundanese for TransPerfect, and then I get several. I got several projects. It was not that big. Like it was a presentation of someone leaving a company, resigning, and they use like a proverb from the ethnic language from the Sundanese, So from, for example, of 20 pages, I think there's only two slides with Sundanese. So then, because I speak
Indonesian. So is it to make a statement? So it's like a presentation is all in the Indonesian, and then you make a statement in your, let's say, original language, your mother tongue, right? So is it useful to tell the world that you speak these other languages other than Indonesian?
Yes, I think that's a good point there.
Also the right is higher because there's not many ethnic translators, you know, language translators in Indonesia that maybe can speak English. So I think the market is, even though it's not that big, but the rate is high, like for transfer. Right?
Yeah,
now you're talking.
I can like offer like 3 times higher than the English to Indonesian compared to the English to Sundanese. I think it's, I don't know if Pak Sugeng experienced the same thing, but they prepared, the agencies prepared to pay more for the ethnic languages than the Indonesian.
Yeah, well, I think it's the market of law.
Yeah.
Pak Sugeng is a specialist in Javanese, so let him speak. Okay, go ahead.
Yes, let's hear it.
Yeah, yeah.
I'd like to hear it also.
Yeah, usually like Ira, so I can set a higher rate for this regional language because not everybody can do this. Or at least the number of the translators mastering that in our field, in this industry, maybe not as many as the one mastering Bahasa Indonesia. And Rita, I noticed recently more and more demand on smaller regional language than Javanese or Sundanese, like Bugis language, like another language
Sumatra Barat, I mean, West Sumatra?
Sumatra, and also Medulis. Medulis is...
Okay. I think also there's a demand for Tetun, the Timor. Okay.
Tetun, yeah.
Tetun.
Wow. So Harry, did I get it right? Are you the managing director of a company? I wrote the name so that I wouldn't have translocalized.
Yeah, Indolingua translocalized. As you can see here. Oh, here. Okay. That's the logo.
Oh, yeah. I hadn't paid attention. I thought it was a brand logo of some sort.
This is the company t-shirt. Basically, I set up the company. Yes, I'm the managing director of PT Indolingua Translocalized. So like most Indonesian, I think like myself, Pak Sugeng is also has a now company. Ira also has a company. But my company started out a bit different in a way that I established that with another professional in translation. But it's a funny story.
In the platform,
there's a forum. There's a forum where you can discuss terms, right? Mm-hmm. And then there was this person. His name is Hikmat Gumilar. I didn't know him at the time. And then we were online, and then we were discussing a term, and then it was a heated discussion. And then I said to him online, you know, okay, let's meet up. Okay, let's take care of this discussion offline. I said,
like this,
and then
right?
We met up, and from there on. From then on, we brought our families there, and then we talked, and then suddenly he became one of my best friends, and we set up this company, Indolingua Translocalized, and then with another person. So yeah, that's right. So it's a funny story, you know, sometimes.
For sure, like for that. Sure. And I love that everything started with terminology, my passion. Right? You got me right there.
It was at the agency.
Yeah, my company, this is a formal company like Eri, started a few years ago when my client asked me to...
He's being humble. He's more than a few years ago, more than a decade.
The client...
He wants to keep it fresh.
The client asked me to form a team, and then I form a team. And then to make it simpler in terms of taxes and so on. So I set up the
technical things, right?
But I separate which one is my freelance job and which one is the company job. And we are now our company. We work with directly with B2B with the big social
Wow.
media company.
He's got direct clients.
Maybe still the biggest now.
I'll ask about
yeah,
that in a minute.
It's a big client, but something.
I'd like to learn more.
This is B2B, so this is a very, very nice. But something not nice is the client said, we are preparing our AI machine, and we don't know when we will start using that. There is something that I don't know how to see this. Eh? But as a matter, the fact is, more and more job shifted to post editing or something like this.
Yes.
Yes, for sure.
Yeah, I think talking about AI, I think it's one of the things that us as freelance, independent professional, and also owners of companies, you know, managing directors of companies, we look at in a suspicious way, but at the same time, it's helping us in a way to diversify. You know, I don't know what Ira or Pak Sugeng have on this take, but I think when I talked, I have a discussion with Pak Sugeng a couple of weeks ago about the demand, and I kind of complained to him. Are we not getting more work because of certain things? And then Pak Sugeng reminded me, okay, maybe because of the AI thing. So I guess an AI is an opportunity, but also at the same time is giving us jitterbugs. You know, what should we do, you know, with this kind of thing happening in front of us, you know?
Mm-hmm. So Ira and I have discussed this briefly somewhere when we met at, mm-hmm. was it my Loch lunch? I think it was, right?
Yes.
Some months
yes.
ago. And you surprised me because I thought it was something that was a bit more far away from your reality than it is for us in certain pairs of languages where, because it's very, very common and it's some of the languages there are, they have better outputs and qualities and all that. But then you told me that that's what I think you told me, as far as I remember, that basically you in your experience doesn't really happen that much, but that you have other friends that actually are already dealing with the full-blown consequences, good and bad, of all of this,
yeah,
right?
Thinking,
so talking about
yeah,
that
about...
So you guys work with which verticals? So Ira, do you do more technical, more creative? What kind of projects do you do? And because if you say that you don't feel AI so much, it means that you're probably, I suppose, is it because you're in a more creative realm of things?
Yeah.
Or
yeah, more in the transcreation, like the website localization. So they don't use AI, but because like I said, and then you met me in TransPerfect, I also work with several agency, and they required me to do the training. So some of the agency, well, because we all know about TransPerfect, they required me to take the training and get certified by them. And then recently,
so you're saying that
two
have
other
to have
agencies.
Trainings from them?
That's right. And then
okay.
Two other agencies just emailed me like a few days ago, Ira, do you have a certification for MTPE? Do you take training? What, so like that. And then in what subject matter that you are experienced in the MTPE? So I think even though most of my project are more transcreation and localization, but because I also take general, technical, legal, you know, and
everything
I
comes
think
away.
The top three of my projects is legal, technical, and finance in banking.
Okay.
So that's from TransPerfect also. So yeah, still have to be prepared. We all have to be prepared, even though like I'm not taking much of the MTP, but I need to get certified by any of the agencies. So that's
So
my
you
experience.
Need to be all set to go so that whenever anything comes your way, you're just you're their
Ready.
Person. You're still
Yes.
Their person, right? So, Harry, do you specialize in one vertical, in one group of languages? Tell us a little bit about your company, and then we'll ask him about his direct clients. No, just kidding. So do you work mostly for agencies? Do you work for direct clients? Do you specialize in one vertical? You do, you know, multiple verticals? So well, what's the company situation? Because people can get to know it and, you know, hire you and, you know, ask questions. And that's what
well,
we
the
want.
Thing is, I am a freelance or independent. So I have to separate that. And then, of course, I work as a the manager of a company, whereas I have to focus because I have costs that I need to think about. So basically, for my company, I take everything, you know, everything that comes our way. But we focus two things. I think the international market, you know, through agencies or direct lines, or the national market, such as the Swan Translation, or, you know, things like if you want to study, you need a Swan Translation. You know, if you want to go abroad and then you need the international driver's license, you need a Swan Translation, things like that. So we cater that, and also individuals and maybe organizations like companies, because sometimes they have to translate their documents. You know, like for example, most companies here, like for example, are multinational, and then the medium or the language is in English probably, and then they or other languages. So when they try to work within their companies, they have this communication internal that has to be in Indonesia, and where also they have to communicate with the bodies in the government. They have to use Indonesian. So we translate that kind of a communication from them. So sometimes also they need the Swan translation of that. So we cater that. Whereas we also deal with LSPs sometimes.
Is it because you offer a wide range of languages too, or do you focus on Indonesian? I say
well,
only
basically
because it's
other languages into Indonesian. Other. So for example, English into Indonesian, German into Indonesian, French into Indonesian. We had a Turkish into Indonesian. We had
look at that
Korean. Yeah, all sorts. But sometimes we have in-house for English, for German, for French. We have Japanese. Into Indonesians, but for others we sometimes outsource into you know, freelance. So we have a pool of database of freelancers also who cater other languages.
So your specialization part is really the Indonesian language in terms of verticals. Then you'll take clients, B2B agencies, anything that requires the service.
That's right.
You were saying, Ira, I'm sorry.
Company with Nikmat also do interpreting, and remember you assigned me one project to Brunei.
Yeah, I remember now.
Because you were doing a pilgrimage. Yeah,
we invested.
We're doing Umrah or something, like you cannot take the job, and then you offered me.
I think I went on Hajj at that time in 2012, I think, or sometimes, and then I offered Ira that work, which was in Brunei, I think, was it?
Yeah, it's
okay. So I offered Ira instead because I couldn't take it. I had to go on a Hajj pilgrimage or Umrah pilgrimage. I kind of forgot. But and then that kind of thing also. I think I got that work from one of the, because I subscribed to American Translators Association. I think I got that work from there. That's,
okay. So our network. I started to know you from Rosetta Stone project. That's why after that project, and then you gave me that job.
Oh, okay, I see.
Don't worry, she'll remember everything.
Women will remember all the dates.
Okay. Well, frankly, I have worked with Ira on quite a lot of projects, and three projects, together.
I think it would be interesting for Rita, and I propose that maybe Harry, because I know him with different project and with Pak Sugeng, like he's a mentor for us. Like
he's our teacher.
Professor.
We learn a lot from him.
Mm-hmm. So let's hear about these clients, right?
Yeah.
So what about these clients? You have these big international companies, your B2B activities, but do you also, is it like that? Do you specialize in apparently not only Indonesian, but at least Javanese and maybe others, right? Or is it because you specialize in a certain vertical? So how do you organize your specialization in your particular company?
Sugeng.
Sugeng.
So we
sorry.
Oh, me. Oh, okay. Oh, all right. Okay, thank you.
I'm looking at you. I forgot to say the name.
Oh, okay. The name of the company is transcomunica.com. Transcomunica.com. This is the website. And I left my company in 2020.
You created it and then you left it.
Yeah, because I assigned my son to be the director of the company. So I do
the second
my
generation
freelance job with the translation. And I set up another company with two other friends for the teaching of Bahasa Indonesia for international students. We will do the opening maybe late 2024. We are preparing that.
Ah, so it's still to come. We're talking about the future.
Yes.
Yeah, because AI is behind me.
You're preparing for options, right?
He's always ready. Yeah? That's why we have to learn a lot from him.
He's already putting on the parachute, right? So that if anything happens, he'll just jump.
try to knit the parachutes. Okay. And Transcomunica provided the services on, like the others, translation, localization, transcreation, subtitling, voice over too. Basically, English into Bahasa Indonesia, Indonesian language, and Japanese. But we are also open for the region, South Asian languages into Bahasa Indonesia. So I'm not talking about that, not talking what I do now. We are talking about the field of the material, then IT-related material and websites, marketing, especially for hotel, and medical equipment, automotive. I have a very long time clients. This is heavy equipment, automotive, and also the last one is the legal techs.
Wow.
There is something that I cannot forget about this legal text. A few years ago, a client from Singapore ordered the translation of this, but this is a mix, English and Mandarin. This is a recording to be evidence in the court. So I have to make a team, a small team consisting of myself and the Mandarin, Mandarin English translators. So the recording, we have somebody is talking, and then this is the recording, a mix of Indonesian and Mandarin to be translated into English because it's to be used as evidence in Singaporean court. This is the criminal court.
Then, oh my God, sounds serious.
Yeah, this is very serious. And my partner, the Mandarin translators, did not want to continue that because her son said, this is very dangerous, ma.
I didn't know that. Okay, interesting story.
This is because this is about a criminal, and then we don't know, thing.
The consequences, possible consequences.
So
we should make it into a movie at some time.
And then
script.
Dangerous interpretation.
Our client, that sorry, we cannot finish this project because I said that my partner cannot continue because of this.
Okay. So white flag.
We are surrendered because of this. That kind of crime is. So actually, the recording is about two person talking about
certain things,
bettering somebody else,
killing somebody. Else.
Yeah.
Okay.
Is that? Oh my God.
I see. Okay.
Wow. And then so we all have strange examples of texts or situations that have crossed our desks and computers, right? So we should do an episode on strange or funny or dangerous stories, right?
We're going to check, though. Did we sign an NDA or not?
We didn't, so we have to keep away from...
once that I got the translation project of a letter of someone's suicide.
Oh my god!
What do you call it? The TTKI, the workers in Saudi.
Migrant.
The migrant workers. Yeah, and then they write like a suicide letter, and then I have to translate that like
to English.
Yes, into English.
Wow. Wow. Well, those are more extreme than the ones I know. That's for sure.
I also got love letters, like someone tried to get a girl.
I guess you get to know people really well, right?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. So what's the story right now? What are you guys working on? So Ida, because Harry calls you Ida, so why should I call you Ira, right?
Ida,
that sounds really good to me. I love it. So what's the story? What are you doing now? Working for multiple companies, working in your marketing things, multiple projects, projects coming from Harry, projects coming from Europe, from the States. What's happening right now without naming names? So let's see what is happening right now in the Ida world, our great language, Lachlan ambassador, right?
Yes, that's right. Yeah. So I think I have listed the agency that I'm working for. Like I am their database. Like I have 15 now.
Okay.
And sometimes it's like you know me and then you recommend me to someone.
Of course. That's what I would do if I had Indonesian requests right now. I would go directly to you and then you would figure out if you want to do it yourself or if you want to send it to somebody else. That's exactly what I would do. So
thank you. Yeah, like that. So now I'm like with 15 international agency. I actually don't get a lot of work from a local agency except Harry one. And then direct client, not many. From the government, I have some project from the government, but I try to
avoid,
you know, not to take too much of them because the paying is too long. You know?
Same in every country, yes.
More in website localization. I'm currently working on two websites. Both of them are technical, but from TransPerfect is the legal finance one, which is regularly, almost every day I have that from TransPerfect finance one. And then if I don't have, if I have less load of my translation project, I have also my education consultant business. Like I take future students to Australia, to Sydney. Yeah, like that.
Orientation program.
Wow.
Yeah, program that I took your son. This is my boy. Yeah. So I took
She's everywhere. She's doing everything. I knew this. I didn't know this fact, but I know that this woman, she's everywhere. I know.
Yes.
So yeah.
She doesn't rest.
I have three children, right? I have three children, and one is already married, and another one is in university studying Japanese. Yeah. And the last one, my daughter.
You're getting your team from your children. You're creating a team of. Language
family
experts.
Business.
Yeah, my daughter is in boarding school and she loves languages also. She took Spanish for 1 year and now she's taking Dutch. I don't know why she's taking Dutch, but she's asking me, can I take Dutch this year? So yeah, okay. So yeah.
I think Dutch is important because some of the Indonesian words are from you know,
they're colonized by the Dutch. We have a lot of
right.
I think
that makes
one
sense.
Of my professors said that one of our students who was a Japanese who studied here in Indonesia, he said, my professor said, you should also study the Dutch because, you know, some of the languages in Indonesia are influenced by the Dutch language, I think. So it's a good thing though, you know?
That's what I do. If I don't have any work, then I do horse riding.
Horse riding. So it's perfect. Like I say, she's full of surprises. She's doing everything. What about you, Harry? So you guys are working with international clients, have huge projects, have things going on.
Well, personally, I'm a professional independent, so I take on work that's on a freelance basis, independently. I have two ongoing work. That's the first one has been with, I worked with it since 2010. So almost like 14 years. And then at the beginning, it was only two people working, and now it's getting bigger. I think the last one was four people working on that project. And then another one is got to do with reviewing. So I'm in a position of quality reviewing, quality lead for Indonesia. So that's my personal freelance work. It takes a lot of work because you have to, you know, when you're onboarded, you have to learn this kind of skill for that project, you know, and then it's by yourself because you are supported by the company that you are working with. But, you know, you have to have this drive of learning new things on your own. And then you have to have that drive. If you don't, I mean, you're not going to survive. And then for my company is basically next door to where I live. I bought a place. Now it's there. It's been here for two years. Before it was a bit further, but it was like a proper office because it was loaned to me because you know. Then the place had to be sold, so I had to find another place. And luckily, the next door was, you know, available. So we bought that, and then the office is now next door. So for the company, I have to survive. I have to because like competition right now is a bit fierce. I have to let go some of my people, especially those who are under contract with me. I have a contract like a year with some of them. And then I have to, you know, let go of them because, you know, the work is diminishing because, like Sugeng said, maybe the AI or maybe, you know, this work is not very, you can easily get it into translation if you're, let's say, bilingual or things like that. But anyone can just, you know, be a translator. So, and also companies are looking for ways of more, you know, making more profits, but, you know, efficient, you know. So I guess one of those things are a factor to the work that we're getting for the company. So like I said, but we do get the work from, you know, people who are, you know, studying abroad, things like that, and companies, you know, preparing their internal communication, etc. So we still survive on that. But we also, we specialize also, we were focusing on subtitling, but it kind of went downhill because the person who was in charge of it, I hired someone, couldn't, you know, had to resign because of certain things. And then I don't have anyone else helping me with this work. The company also have an interpreting division. My partner, Hikmat Kumilar, oversees that. So we rent a booth, we rent, you know, the tools for interpreting. But since COVID, that kind of went downhill because everyone was, you know,
doing it remotely.
Online. Yeah, doing it. Mm-hmm. Yeah, like RSI, you know, remote simultaneous interpreting, etc. So those are the challenges that I'm faced at the moment. But, you know, we're still surviving. We have to survive. Like Pak Sugeng, we have to find a parachute to survive like this.
Yes. So let's hear a little bit more.
Yes.
Let's hear a little bit more about this future project, or is it still super secret? Sugeng.
Oh, okay. Not the future project now. The future project is the teaching of Bahasa Indonesia, so it's not secret yet. And maybe if you notice, Harry and Ira address me with Pak, Pak Sugeng.
Exactly. Pak, I know they call you something else that I cannot understand.
Yeah, Pak is, this is the term of address to show an honor for someone more senior.
We respect
Pak Sugeng, so they address me Pak Sugeng.
It's like the master.
Master Zugeng, yeah.
It's basically like sir, you know, when we address someone who's who feel he's, you know, we should honor him.
Honorific addressing terms.
Honorific address,
okay,
yeah.
I like that. I like that.
Okay, let's about the company Transcomunica, transcomunica.com. Mostly the project is on tech, this social media company for the websites and also legal. We have 18 persons in there.
Wow.
One director and three managers, and the rest is the rest are translators. We are, I think we survived. We survived. But the profit is not like the previous years, but yeah, we survived. For my own clients, my freelance, as me as a freelancer, I try to keep the old clients, so maybe more than 10 years clients. I mean, this is very, very long, and I never date a new project or job from the popular platform because the price is sometimes, we know sometimes it's
inhuman.
Also, I try to. Yeah, and now what I'm doing is transition marketing, transition for marketing, automotive, and legal. These are very long clients. And we grew together, and I still remember the nice PM in 2020 called me just to say, "Sugeng, we are very sorry. One of the plant closed now, so we cannot blah blah blah." Okay, just to say to express the sympathy that no job from him. So this is very. Very nice
gesture.
Yeah. Very nice relation between PM and us.
That's how I met Ina, because I was a PM.
Yeah, we have nice PM in front of us here.
That's perfect. There's another PM. They actually write a New Year's card to me. They send New Year's cards.
How famous and important you are.
Snail mail.
Because now, you know, people send e-card through emails, but PM from TransPerfect actually sent a card.
I think,
okay.
It's writing.
Must
I'm
be special.
Waiting for that too.
Okay,
that's
now we
school.
Know that everybody is now expecting their own. It's now the new thing is to want things to go back to what they were 20 years ago and to get your own postcards
the
from PM.
Way. Oscar,
when I go back to being a PM, I will keep that in mind and send everybody cards.
Yeah,
oh my God,
motivated.
This has been very surprising. I wasn't expecting this conversation to be this way because, of course, I had never even seen you. But it was absolutely amazing. Learned a lot. If you want me to post any links to your, you know, companies and your profiles and all those things, send them my way and then I'll do it. And it was just unbelievable to get to know you and finally talking to you a little bit more, Ida. And so I'm really happy about it. So thank you so much for putting it together because Ida put it together for me. I asked her for help and she did it. And she went to her very good references, I can tell, right? So very important people in her life. You have been learning from each other and you have been, you know, admiring each other. Working together. Yeah. So it's been amazing for me to watch. So thank you so much. It's been a privilege, really. And I'm really thankful that you just took this challenge without knowing what to expect and just went for it. And it was unbelievable. It was great. So thank you so much, you guys. And it was amazing to meet you.
Thank you, Rita.
Thank you, Rita.